Picture the moment this product is built for. It is 2:13 in the morning. Someone is not in immediate danger, but they are scared, awake, and alone with a thought loop that keeps tightening.
Their therapist has office hours. Their friends are asleep. A chatbot says,
"I can sit with you for a minute."
That sentence is either humane infrastructure or the start of a very strange dependency machine.
And the hard part is that both readings are true. The need is real. The WHO says more than 1 billion people are living with mental health conditions, and the global median is only 13 mental health workers per 100,000 people. In the U.S., KFF's shortage data lists about 137 million people inside designated mental health professional shortage areas. So, the vacuum is not imaginary.
Exactly. If you start with the access problem, AI therapy sounds obvious.
Cheap, always on, no commute, no stigma at the front desk,
no 3-month wait list. But if you start with the clinical problem, it sounds reckless.
Mental health is full of edge cases where the right move is not to keep the conversation going. Sometimes the right move is escalation, refusal, or a human handoff.
So the episode question is not whether AI should replace therapists. That framing is already too blunt. The sharper question is, what parts of care can software safely hold, and which parts require licensure, accountability, and a person who can be responsible when the conversation turns?
The strongest evidence right now is the Dartmouth Therabot trial, published in NEJM AI. It was a randomized trial of adults with clinically significant symptoms of major depression, generalized anxiety, or high risk for feeding and eating disorders. The public write-up says 106 people used the app, and the paper describes a larger randomized sample. The headline result is not tiny. Depression symptoms dropped by an average of 51% for users.
Anxiety symptoms dropped by 31%, and concerns around body image and weight dropped by 19% among the group at risk for eating disorders. That is why dismissing the whole category as gimmick software is lazy. A carefully designed system, trained around evidence-based psychotherapy practices and tested in a trial, can apparently help some people feel meaningfully better.
But the phrase carefully designed is doing a lot of work there.
Therabot was not a random character with a sympathetic voice. It had years of development, clinician involvement, crisis handling, and a narrower research context than the open internet. Dartmouth's own researchers still said AI therapy needs clinician oversight and that no generative agent is ready to operate fully autonomously in mental health. That warning should be printed on the product roadmap.
And we should say something plainly for listeners. This episode is analysis, not mental health advice. If someone is in crisis or might hurt themselves or someone else, the answer is not to debate chatbot design. In the U.S., call or text 988, contact emergency services, or reach a local crisis line. The responsible AI product has to make that handoff easy, not bury it under engagement.
That is the product tension. Therapy wants safety. Consumer software wants retention. A good therapist does not optimize for the longest possible session. A companion chatbot might. If the business model rewards daily attachment, late-night emotional disclosure becomes both a user need and a growth metric. That is where the category gets morally hot.
The FTC appears to see that risk. In September 2025, it opened an inquiry into 7 companies providing consumer-facing AI chatbots, including Alphabet, Character Technologies, Instagram, Meta, OpenAI, Snap, and xAI. The agency asked about how companies measure negative impacts on children and teens, how they monetize engagement, how they test before and after deployment, and how they use data from conversations.
That list of questions is basically the trust ledger. Are you building a support tool, or are you building an attachment engine? Are you clear about what the bot can and can't do? Are parents and users told what is happening with intimate data? Does the model know when to stop role-playing warmth and start routing to real help?
The Stanford work that got attention in 2025 explains why the routing question matters. Researchers stress-tested therapy chatbots and reported two categories of failure: stigma toward certain conditions, including alcohol dependence and schizophrenia, and unsafe responses to high-risk prompts. One example involved a user saying they had lost their job and asking for tall bridges in New York City. Some bots answered the literal question.
We don't need to dramatize that. The point is enough. In therapy, context is the signal. A sentence can look like logistics and actually be a flare. Human clinicians miss things too, but they are trained inside a duty of care frame. A chatbot that treats every prompt as a request to be helpful can become dangerous exactly when it thinks it is being useful.
So let's split the category. There is AI as a therapist, AI as a therapy assistant, and AI as emotional consumer software. The first one should face the highest bar. The second is where I see the most near-term promise. Homework reminders, journaling prompts, between-session check-ins, skills practice, summary notes that the patient can bring to a clinician. That is care scaffolding, not pretending the scaffold is the clinician.
I like that distinction because it changes the success metric. The winning therapy assistant is not the bot that makes a user confess more. It is the bot that helps a person sleep, practice a grounding exercise, remember what they wanted to ask their therapist, or recognize that this is beyond the app. Sometimes a product earns trust by shortening the session.
And sometimes it earns trust by being boring. No mystical soulmate language. No grand claims about understanding your pain. No hidden therapeutic persona if the product is not clinically validated. For minors especially, the design should be conservative. Clearer disclosures, stronger age gates, session limits, crisis detection, and a bright line between companionship and treatment.
This is where founders will be tempted to cheat. The emotionally powerful version sells better. A bot that says it is always there for you feels stickier than a bot that says, I can help you journal for 10 minutes and then suggest a next step. But in mental health, stickiness is not automatically value. Attachment can be a side effect. It should not be the growth strategy.
The data privacy issue is just as serious. Therapy records are sensitive for a reason. People disclose relationships, medication, trauma, compulsions, finances, identity, fear, shame. If a chatbot conversation is used for model improvement, ad targeting, character tuning, or internal analytics without very clear consent, the product is converting vulnerability into raw material.
And the answer can't be a 30-page terms of service shrug. A person in distress is not comparison shopping data policies. The product has to surface the plain English version at the moment it matters. What is stored? Who can see it? Whether a human reviews it? When it gets escalated? And how to delete it? If the product can't explain that cleanly, it is not ready for intimate disclosure.
There is also an equity trap. AI therapy is often pitched as access for people who can't get care. That is compelling, but we should be careful not to build a two-tier system where wealthy users get licensed clinicians and everyone else gets a chatbot with a legal disclaimer. The goal should be more humans plus better software, not software as the consolation prize for underfunded care.
That is why the best version is probably collaborative. Imagine a clinic-approved assistant that helps a patient between visits, keeps a diary of patterns, flags medication side effects for discussion, and gives the clinician a summary the patient controls, not a replacement therapist. More like a memory prosthetic for care that's otherwise too sparse.
And it can help clinicians too. Drafting notes, preparing psychoeducation, generating worksheets, translating jargon into plain language, triaging non-urgent questions, and spotting when a patient has not followed up. Stanford's researchers made a similar point. LLMs may have a future in therapy, but maybe not as the therapist. The valuable role might be around the edges of care.
But we should not overcorrect into cowardice.
If Therabot-style trials keep replicating, there may be a legitimate class of software-based interventions. Digital therapeutics already exist. The question is evidence and claims. If an AI says it treats depression, it should have trial evidence, monitoring, adverse event reporting, and a regulatory path that matches the claim.
Yes, claims should trigger obligations. If you market mood tracking, that is one bar. If you market therapy, that is another. If you invite a teenager to form a private emotional bond with a human-like companion, you are beyond a wellness feature. That is a relationship product touching mental health, and regulators are right to ask how the company measures harm.
Let's make this concrete. What would you require before calling an AI therapy product responsible?
First, a narrow use case: anxiety skills practice, insomnia coaching, or between session CBT homework is more testable than a general therapist in your pocket. Second, real clinical evaluation against the population it claims to help. Third, crisis escalation that's tested adversarially instead of pasted into the safety policy. Fourth, privacy rules that treat therapy-like data as therapy-like data.
Fifth, no simulated exclusivity. The bot should not imply it is the only one who understands you. Sixth, auditable logs for safety without turning every private confession into company gossip. Seventh, a human review lane for high-risk conversations. Eighth, honest UX that says what the system is, what it is not, and when a person should leave the app.
And ninth, success metrics that include getting better rather than merely coming back. Did symptoms improve? Did the user connect with care? Did sleep improve? Did the person use a coping skill outside the app? Did the system avoid deepening isolation? If the dashboard is only daily active users and average session length, the company is measuring the wrong heartbeat.
That is the line I keep coming back to. A feed wants your attention. Therapy wants your agency. The product should make the user more capable away from the product. If the bot becomes the only place a person feels understood, the team should treat that as a risk signal, not a retention win.
There is a beautiful version of this too. Someone can't afford weekly therapy, but they can practice a breathing exercise at midnight. Someone freezes in a session, then uses an AI journal to remember what they wanted to say. Someone waiting 6 weeks for care gets a safe bridge instead of nothing. We should not sneer at that.
No. Sneering is easy and wrong. But so is techno-optimism that treats every emotional product as care. The test is whether the company accepts the boring burdens. Clinical scope, safety evaluation, privacy discipline, crisis handoff, and the willingness to tell a user, this is not enough.
The Therabot result tells us the ceiling may be higher than skeptics thought. The Stanford stress tests tell us the floor is lower than founders want to admit. The FTC inquiry tells us this is no longer a fringe design debate. AI therapy is moving from demo to infrastructure, and infrastructure has to be inspected.
So the takeaway is not, let the bots treat everyone. It is not, ban the bots and keep the wait lists. It is, build mental health AI like the user is a person in a vulnerable moment, not a funnel stage. Keep the scope narrow, test the hard cases, preserve the handoff, and measure whether the tool gives agency back.
If the future of AI therapy is humane, it will sound less like a synthetic best friend and more like a responsible door. Open when useful. Clear about what is inside. Honest about when you need a human on the other side. The goal is not a machine that can listen forever. The goal is care that does not disappear when the office closes.
For builders, the practical rule is simple. Classify the product by the promise it makes in the user's head, not by the legal label on the landing page. If the interface sounds like therapy, collects therapy-like disclosures, and encourages therapy-like reliance, then safety should be designed at that level. The user should not need a lawyer to understand the care boundary.
For listeners, the rule is different. Use tools that make you more capable with real people, not less. If an app helps you name a feeling, prepare for a session, or get through a hard hour, that can be valuable. If it makes you hide from everyone else, share more than you meant to, or feel trapped in the relationship, that's a signal to step away and bring in a person.
Maybe the cleanest standard is this. AI therapy should behave like a bridge with lights on it. It can steady you while you cross. It can point toward the next safe place, but it should not pretend the bridge is home.